Welcome to the 207 Collective. I'm Justin, and got a pretty cool guest today. Somebody, if you are into hunting, fishing, anything outdoors, you probably should be following this guy on Instagram or Facebook or whatever. Nate Fenderson, how's it going?
How you doing, Justin? Hey, very pleased to be here. Thank you very much for having me on.
No, I'm super excited that you're able to make it in. Like I said, scheduling, we were just talking about it. Like, scheduling's been a nightmare.
Crazy. It only comes this time of year. It's like you got turkey season coming up, you've got ice fishing that just went out, you got shed hunting that's going on, and you got work in there.
Well, that's what I was trying to get to you before anything big creaks. I know, like, once turkey season starts, and then that's what it is, that's life. So I'm like, I gotta get him in here before that goes. So before we get into the whole what's going on with you now and doing all that, can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, local to Maine. I grew up in southern Maine with my grandparents. My grandfather was, my whole family's been big hunters ever since I was a kid. I loved it. And my grandfather, he used to take us out, and I used to run the woods pretty hard, you know, try to chase the deer. But I took it from a young age and, you know, harvested my first buck when I was 10 years old. And I've been very fortunate to be able to pull it off every year ever since. A lot of learnings. Every year's a learning, you know, experience. It's been an evolution of growing into the sport, from fishing to hunting to everything, but whitetail is my passion.
Right. Yeah, like I said, I like on Facebook, I'll wake up in the morning and you'll be hunting with, they're taking a youth or doing something with somebody.
Yeah, youth hunting is the biggest thing. I mean, I've always loved doing that. When you could take a kid out and teach them and see their expression, their emotions when they first get out there in the woods, there's nothing like it. Usually turkey hunting is one of the easiest ones because it's nonstop action. But deer hunting, I love taking it out because it teaches patience. You know, and the subtle things that most people as hunters when they're walking around woods, they miss, I try to teach them that. And that's the thing. When I take kids out, it's not about the kill.
Right.
It's about all the experiences that lead up to it. The people we meet, the lunch we have, the calls we're using, what are we looking for sign? And if we harvest the deer, then that's just the added bonus on top of it. They just get lucky.
That's awesome. Like my boy's six. He'll be seven in November. And he's all fired up about turkey hunting right now. And now that they're letting, you know, the 410s are in there. So we've been shooting a little bit. He's got all his gear. He's got everything ready to go. He's been watching turkey videos nonstop. I don't know if he's going to actually be able to pull the trigger when it comes time to do it, you know, because he'll get nervous or, you know, something. But I can't wait to see the look on his face when we're out there in the morning and hear that first gobble. Like,
that's the key.
Yeah, like that's what I'm looking forward to most. And I would say out of, like, all the hunting that I do, I mean, I'm definitely anywhere close to being a master hunter or anything like that, but turkey hunting is probably what I know the least about. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to harvest birds every year for the last, you know, 8 or 9 years, but a lot of them's been luck. Driving through and just happen to see them in the right place and set yourself up in the right spot and get one. Majority of my birds I've gotten them from calls, but not many.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of like, where are they going, cutting them off kind of thing.
Ambushing them.
Yeah. And that's, I want to get a little more away from that and doing it more of the traditional type way. But,
box call, bud. Yeah. Use box call or push button?
I have one. I have all of them. And, there was one night that I got a call and I can't remember what it was. And it came with a DVD and I was like, so I watched it the night before, and I'm like, all right, whatever. And then I used it, and sure enough, that I shot a bird over that.
That's awesome.
And same thing in my first year. A buck roar from Primos.
That's what I use.
Yeah, I bought one, and it came with a little DVD. That night, I listened to it. I watched it. And then that following day, I went out. I sat on a rock, and then a couple... I was cold. I was fed up. I was done hunting. I was just sitting on a rock smoking a cigarette, like I was just kind of upset, just not wanting to be out there anymore. I pulled that out and I just did, you know, a couple calls like they did on that. And sure enough, this 8-pointer came in, not running, but like he was looking for something, like steadily strutting at me. And I couldn't believe it. And I pulled up and I shot and I'm like, wow, I just killed my first deer. This is awesome. And been going ever since.
But calls are... I'll be honest with you, calls are probably, I won't go to the deer woods without a call on me, even when I'm tracking. And a lot of people, like, when you're tracking, you don't use it. I do. I use it all the time. And the reason why I do is when you come to an opening where you think that deer is there, you blow a couple grunts on it or a snort wheeze or something. If the deer's not right there or if he's in hearing distance, he'll come back. A lot of times people, that's what they mess up on. And when they're either in tree stands or not, they're like, they blow a call and they're like, oh no, that didn't work. Sometimes deer can't hear you. And I had an experience with that actually down on the coast where I was out in this marsh. I was in this little tree, but I knew if I got out there, I was going to see a good deer. I was bow hunting and I see this big buck come out this corner within the cattails. And there was another buck, and there was three of them. But what I didn't see was the doe that was in front of them. And I blew a snort wheeze at him, and they kept on going. And I was like, man, they aren't interested. And I was like, right. No, I can do it louder. I did it louder. They still didn't stop. I blew as loud as I could, did that snort wheeze, and they stopped. And the last one turned and looked at me. And then they kept on going. And I said, this ain't going to work. Yeah. And 20 minutes later, as I'm sitting there, I look, and that he was 10-point. He come walking around. He come walking right under. I shot him at 8 yards with my bow. And from that day on, I was like, yeah, this stuff works. But you have to do it where they can hear you. That's the thing.
Right. I don't know. I never learned it, never saw it anywhere. I'll do it sometimes when I'm walking through the woods. If I know I'm making a little more noise than what I want to make, I'll throw a couple grunts just out in there just to, you know, maybe try to cover up what I'm doing as far as my sound. I don't know. The last couple of years, I've definitely spent more time paying attention to the land, paying attention to the wind is one major thing that I used to never really give a shit about. And then once I really started paying attention to the apps and everything and, you know, what they were telling me, the wind direction, having multiple areas that I could go to and then going to the one that has the best wind for that, not the one that I wanted to go to,
right,
but the one that was set up best, I've been seeing way more deer.
Well,
way more deer.
And that's the thing. I think a lot of people, they don't key on. They get keyed on an area, and they're like, I have to sit this stand because I got a big buck coming out.
Right.
They don't realize those deer are big for a reason. They know that whole area. You're in their area, their bedroom, and you've got to play the wind. Now, I play the wind all the time when I'm bow hunting or even when I'm tree stand hunting with a rifle, but when I'm tracking, I kind of throw it out the window.
Yeah, that kind of doesn't matter so much. Yeah, like this year, that 8-pointer I shot was actually on a spot where I pulled all my cameras out of because I wasn't getting any action at all. And the only reason I went there was because the wind was decent and I only had 2.5 hours to hunt because we had something going on that I had to go to after. So I'm like, I don't have much time. This is the easiest place to get into. Wind direction's right. Went there. Sure enough, first time ever. You saw that I posted the video on.
It was an awesome video.
Yeah. Well, I wish I could have got the doe coming in and the buck coming in after it. And the other deer that were just hanging out that I was watching the whole time because I was tagged out for 20 for a doe. And a couple yearlings were just out there just hanging out, watching them. And 10 minutes before that, a girl had just come through on a four-wheeler because I hunt private land on this farm.
Yeah.
And she came through on a four-wheeler with probably 12 dogs because that's what she does is runs dogs and stuff. So I'm like, well, there goes that hunt. You know, I'm not going to see anything. And then sure enough, 10 minutes later, these two deer come out from the same direction that she went, so mm-hmm. they obviously didn't care. And they came out, and then probably another 20 minutes after that, that doe came rushing in right under my stand. I could hear her breathing heavy and everything, and I'm like, something's happening. And then, sure enough, that buck came in, you know, directly and like head-on at me, and then that was it. And then the weird thing was she wouldn't leave. She just stood there, and then she was stomping, snorting at it. And she was getting closer and closer. And so I climbed down to my climber, and she still wouldn't go anywhere. And now I'm standing on the ground. She's 15, 20 feet away from me.
She wants to be bred.
And I was like, yeah. I'm like, go, come on, get out of here. And then she kept getting closer to the buck. And I'm like, she's going to start stomping it or, you know, whatever. And finally, I got close enough to her that she just kind of, she didn't run off, but she just kind of walked off. And the girl that came through on the wheeler, you know, she heard the shot from the house and she called me and she's like, is that you? And I was like, yep. I'm like, I got a good one down. She's like, oh, I'll be right out with the four wheeler. And I was like, perfect.
That's awesome.
And she came out and she's like, there's a doe standing like right over there. And I'm like, yeah, she won't take off. I don't get it. That's what everyone said. Like, she wanted to be, you know, she wanted to be bred. But
you tell me your heart wasn't pumping the second you saw that doe coming and then you saw the antlers coming out.
Well, I mean, I was already on pretty good alert because of the does that were just kind of hanging out anyway. And then that dough came out, and I'm like, this is what everybody talks about, you know.
That rush.
That everyone talks about, you know, a doe, a buck chasing a doe, mm-hmm. and seeing it, you know. And that was my first time personally seeing it in the woods and actually harvesting a deer off something like that, so.
It's so cool. I mean, through the years, my hearing is horrible. But my eyesight, thank God, is pretty good. So I'll have buddies that'll say, hey, do you hear those bucks, you know, grunt and stuff? I can't hear them grunt unless they get super, super close. Right. But my eyesight, I pick everything out. And I think that's one of the things my grandfather always taught me. He said, scan the woods, like wherever you are, scan it. Most things are vertical, up and down. Horizontal, they're laying down or something like that. Scan where it is, and then you sit there and you wait, and you do a scan, and you look and see if there's anything changed in that picture. Same thing when you're tracking. If you're tracking and you go 10, 15 feet, you stop and you look, you scan the woods, and you're looking for something different. And the biggest thing I see people, you know, at least tracking-wise, is they're looking for the whole deer. And most of the time, you won't see the whole deer.
Right, they're going to be behind something. They're going to be...
Yeah, you'll see an antler, an ear.
Or they're bedded.
Yeah, it's something like that. And so what you're going to be looking for is you're going to be looking for pieces of the deer. Now, you may see the whole thing, but I look for pieces or something that's out of place, you know, and that's what you key on. Bow hunting, same thing. I love bow hunting, you know. And early season is great because it's bed to food, so they're very patentable at that time. And they're predictable what they're going to do. But these big bucks, they're smart. They don't do the same thing all the time, these big mature bucks. They've got different little routes. And during the wintertime, what I'll do is if I have an area where I know there was a really big buck and he hasn't been harvested, I'll go back in there and I'll find his track and I backtrack him. I never track him because if you track him, you're going to jump him. He's just going to run.
Right.
I backtrack him. I want to see where he was laying down. Where was he feeding? And I take that Onyx and I put the tracker, you know, put that on. And I'll backtrack him. I did that a couple times this year. I had a huge buck in New Hampshire, and I just could not figure this deer out what he was doing. And so I got his track, and his track was very, you could see which track he was. He was just big. He had a wide spread, or stride, I should say. And I got on his track, and I started following him, and I backtracked him. And there was this huge swamp down there, and I never really went through it because it was always wet.
Right.
He brought me through this path that was actually little hummocks that were dry. And I found three places in that swamp where he had bedded down and then where he had come out. And I was like, all right, that's kind of cool. So the next time it snowed, I got on his track again. He brought me another way into that swamp and came to the same three places. I picked three trees in that area now that I can see down in there. So if he's in that swamp and he decides to get out of there, I'm going to get a shot either with a shotgun rifle,
yep,
or with a bow is what I really want to do. I love bow hunting. So I got two hummocks. What I did is he's got these areas that he goes through, and I kind of made a separate little path on it, and it came up by this one tree. And the last time I was in there, he started using that path. And what's going to happen is he's going to make that his normal path.
Yeah.
And a lot of the big ones I've killed down on the coast there during expanded, that's what I've done during the wintertime. I'll go make these little paths through the thickest stuff you ever see, and they get comfortable. They're not on the main pass, and they'll use these things. And I've got trees that are set up for my I use a climber all the time.
Yep.
And I did that because down on the coast, a lot of people stealing them. But if you shoot a good buck, it's like, I don't know what it is. The deer is dead, but everybody wants to be in your lap at that point.
Yeah, I never quite understood when somebody sees a nice deer or you shoot a nice deer or something like that, then someone's like, where'd you get that deer at? And yeah, it's like, well, it's in the back of my truck. You know, it's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And then I'm sure you've obviously run into it where, you know, out of the, you know, either you just don't want to go alone or you kind of want to help somebody out and bring somebody to a certain area. And next thing you know, that spot's blown up and, you're starting to see people in there that you're recognizing that, you know, aren't supposed to really be in there. I'm not saying that they're not supposed to, because if it's private, I mean, it's public land, they can do what they want, but there's something between hunters that is supposed to be...
It's an etiquette.
Yes.
And, you know, I've got some of my best friends and stuff that I'll bring them to a place and they won't go into it unless they give me a call. And I tell them, like, if I brought you just into a place to hunt, go in there, have a ball. I would be just as happy if you shoot the biggest buck in the world in there as if I did.
Right.
The only time I get irritated is when I go to a spot and I'll see a guy that I brought in and next thing I know, there's eight other people with him.
Yep.
That irritates me because now all that work that I put in, I mean... You figure you're going from having the luxury of getting all that experience, all that knowledge for you to be able to shoot a deer to now you're giving it to everybody and now your spot's gone. Now you got to go find another spot.
Yeah.
And, you know, my son, he's funny. He's like, Dad, I never seen anybody that has so many spots. I get a ledger that I put all my spots in.
I was going to say, you are everywhere.
I do that for a reason. It's like at work, because I work down in Portsmouth. If I've got 10 minutes at lunch, I'm in a piece of property. If I've got 20 minutes after we're doing something and we're driving down the road and something catches my eye, stop the truck. I'm going in and check it out. And I do that because you never know when the next best thing is where you're going to find it. And it could be right there in front of you. It's like hunting on the coast. A lot of these big deer or small deer, any deer, I consider them all trophies to me. And to figure them out, I go to the places where most people won't. And that could be a small little 5-acre piece, 10-acre piece. It could be a piece that you're driving by on the road and you'd be like, man, there's never going to be a deer in there. Mm-hmm. But I'll guarantee you, a big buck, he'll be in there laying down. And, you know, it's those are the kind of places that you go in. I had this one little spot that I went in, and I do a lot with mock scrapes and stuff, and I use Northwoods Common Sense scent. And I got a little secret that I use, and I'll divulge it to you on it. I mix 2 ounces of buck tarsal with 1 ounce of hot dough. And I put that in my scent tripper. And I start those about the second week of August. And everybody says, why do you start them so early? I start them early because what happens is as those deer use those scrapes, after about the third or fourth time that I fill them up and leave them, I don't have to do anything after that. They just, it's automatically, right. It's their scrape now. And a lot of them are social scrapes. Deer are very social animals when it comes to vocalization or checking out scent trippers. And I had some really good luck in this one spot. And I told Dylan Corbett to go in there. I said, hey, I called him up. He's like my nephew. So I said, hey, go in there and you're going to shoot this big buck. And he couldn't get down from up north. And he shoots some giants up north. But he was going to be down in this area. And I said, if you go in there, I'm telling you, Dylan, you're going to shoot a big buck. And he calls me up and he says, Uncle Nate, I couldn't get in there. I said, well, if you're not going to go in there, I'm going to go in there. He says, yep, go in there. And I shot a 23.5-inch wide 8-pointer that night. And he came right up to the scent tripper. And it was awesome. But a lot of people, they think they have to be in the biggest woods there is. And, you know, it's a misconception. You just got to be where the deer are, you know. And that could be anywhere.
I mean, I kind of learned about the space is... when I started 2 years ago hunting like Rachel Carson.
Yeah.
Like you get into this, like the spot that I shot a deer out of, funny story, like how I did it was I got permission, you know, I paid, I got my permit and all that. I had never hunted it, never killed a deer with a shotgun, nothing. And all I had was those shitty paper maps that you download that you can't figure anything out from. So I'm looking at them and I'm pulled over on the side of this road, and I'm like trying to figure out where I want to go. And it's in the evening. The next thing I know, a federal wildlife officer pulls up behind me, and I was like, holy shit, already? Like, I'm like, I didn't even get out of my truck yet. Well, I noticed the guy coming at me, and I'm like, oh, that's Zach. It's a guy that I do jiu-jitsu with.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no way. So we start, he notices me, and he's like, hey, what's going on? I'm like, hey, man. I'm like, I'm pretty much lost when it comes to this. I got no idea what I'm doing, you know, nothing. And he goes, well, download Onyx on your phone. So I downloaded that, and then he's like, it'll give you everything. Mm-hmm. It'll show you all the boundaries. It'll show you all the no-hunt zones. It'll show you all that. And I was like, all right. So I'm like, you'd be the guy to know. I'm like, any hot spots around here? Any spots, you know, people are dragging deer out all the time? And he kind of looked at me, and he laughed. He goes, well, where you're parked right now? He goes, we just got a poacher out of there. Like 2 weeks ago. And he's like, we've had cameras all through here. He's like, if you go in there, I'll be shocked that you don't see a deer. I'm like, it's only like a 7-acre piece. Like, mm-hmm. it's not big. And he goes, remember, you're in Kennebunk. Watch out your range. He goes, it's not 300 feet from the house. It's 400 feet. So, you know, pay attention because there was a house nearby. Yeah. And he goes, there's also some, you know, no hunting land. He's like, there's cameras there too, so watch out for that. And I was like, all right, no problem. He goes, give me a call if you see anything, need any help. I'm like, all right. So I got my climber, I head out, and I set myself up. So I had my phone out on the Onyx, so you could range how far you are away from something. Yeah. So I had to be 400 feet from that house. I think I was 370 something. I mean, I was pushing it, I was close. But I was legal as long as I was shooting in that direction. I was good. And I got up in that climber. And it was my first time going out in the woods there, and I couldn't believe the sign that I saw. Just the trails, and I'm like, there's got to be deer everywhere through here. And I got up in my climber. I'm sitting there. I was probably 20, 25 minutes. My wife texts me, said that her brother had just shot a small buck, and I'm like, oh, cool, you know, good for him. I no sooner put my phone in my pocket, I hear something coming to my left side, and I'm like, oh, And I had two doe tags of 24, so I'm like, I didn't really care what it was. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, like, I'm like, oh, it's got a rack on it. I'm like, it's a buck, and it's a decent one. So came in about 35 yards, and that was it. So then I'm like, and then I find it, which it didn't go very far. I find it, get it out of this little brook that it landed in, and, you know, get it out, and I'm just looking at it. And all of a sudden I hear, to my left, I look, and there's a doe staring right at me, probably about 35 yards away. And I'm like, oh. But my shotgun's about 8 feet away from me, and I'm like, oh. So I tried to, like, slowly reach over and grab my gun, and I couldn't. She spooked and took off. And then I call Zach, and I'm like, hey, man, like, I just dropped a nice 8-pointer, like, well, 7. One was, I don't know if you'd count it. I counted it.
They all count.
Yeah. And I'm like, man, I really appreciate it. And he's like, oh, do you need a hand dragging or anything like that? I'm like, no, I can see my truck from where I am, so I'm good, you know.
That's so cool.
Went back up the jet sled, and, I mean, it was quick, but I mean, I was hooked after that. So,
yeah, I just love everything about it. And I, you know, it's, I've got a few mounts and stuff, and it's funny. It's like when I look at my, and I enjoy that part of it is having my mounts on the wall and stuff like that, is every time I look at them, I can tell you the day, maybe not the time, but I can tell you evening, morning, whatever. And it just brings all that hunt back to me. And it's like, I've got quite a few, and, you know, my wife, you know, Angie, she saw it. It's like Cabela's. She's like, holy smokes, what is this? But I'm like, and I'm going through it, and she's not a hunter, so she's like, what is this? And I'm like, I'm naming, yeah, I got this one, and I got a name for him. I can tell you what I got him with, how much he weighed and everything. And she's like, how do you remember all that?
Yeah, I'm getting to the point now where, I mean, I don't have any. I just got my first, like, professionally done Euro mounts done this year.
Nice.
Of the one I shot last year and that 7/8-pointer, whatever it was. That one. So I don't have anything like any wall hangers. I mean, I'm not really that particular.
They're all wall hangers.
I'm starting to get that way. Like, I'm starting to get a little more confidence and feeling like I could start to get a little bit better deer. As far as like does go, like that kind of thing. If I draw a permit for 24 or 20, like I'm
shooting them.
Yeah, I'm getting a doe. Like that's kind of a given now, but.
I get asked that all the time, like, Nate, how come you shoot so many does? And I'm like, I'm a deer hunter. I love harvesting deer. And if I've got a zone 20 tag, if I've got a zone 24 tag, if I've got M tags, L tags, and I see a doe, it's probably going to have a bad day.
Yeah.
You know, I said that this year. You know, I took my son out, and he's active military, so I haven't been able to hunt with him in 6 years. You know, other than a couple times he came in for turkey, but for deer, we haven't been able to hunt. And there's something about that. I mean, I love hunting with my son. You know what I mean?
You guys had an awesome season, too.
I love teaching him. I love seeing how he's doing and all that stuff. And so we went in, and he got his deer. And it's one of those things that it's a place that I've hunted before, and I saw a really big buck there last year. But, you know, I had a doe tag. It was opening day, and I see this doe, what I thought was a doe, a spike horn, and I shoot it. And it's a spike. And I was just as happy to tag that spike for my buck as I would have been if it had been a 10-pointer.
Right.
And my buddies are with me like, man, you shot a spike. And I'm like, yeah, it's awesome. They're like, yeah, but it's a spike. I'm like, dude, are you kidding me? It's a deer. I was like, I was so excited seeing that deer came through, you know. And it's every one of them always get me excited like that.
Yeah.
Tyler, putting him out there, and he really wanted – he's never killed an 8-pointer. This is the only kid I know that's killed a 9-pointer, an 11-pointer, 4-pointer, 3-pointer. Never killed an 8-pointer. He goes, Dad, I just want to kill an 8-pointer. I'm like – you don't count them. Like, you get what you get, you know?
Right.
And he ended up harvesting that nice 8-pointer. And just the expression on his face and calling me, it was the best feeling ever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I can't wait. I mean, I'm not gonna push my boy into it. You know, I'll show it to him, whatever it is. And if he chooses that's what he wants to do, then great. I mean, if not, then, you know, to each his own.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
But, yeah, I can't wait to see how that all unfolds. Like, when my father, when I called him and I shot that 8-pointer, my first deer ever, and I dropped that one, and I called him, and my brother was on the phone, and I was like, yeah. I'm like, I'm by the, we called it the treehouse, because it was this one big platform that we had put up in between, like, 6 or 7 trees, and it was probably, like, I don't know, 6 by 8. Like, it was huge. So you could just kind of move around, and I shot, you know, from there, and I told him where I was, and he's like, yep, perfect. And, you know, my father had shot deer in the past, and he stopped hunting when I was, I don't know, before I was a teenager, he stopped. I was probably only like 7 or 8, I think. I remember him, and he stopped hunting. And my brother went with him a couple times and shot a small deer. And then my father just got out of it. I didn't actually get into hunting until my junior year of high school.
Really?
Yeah. And that's when me and my brother and a bunch of us took hunter safety. And then once I got back into it, my brother got back into it, then my father decided he was going to start hunting again. So
bring the whole family together.
Yeah, so it did too. And my father likes it. You know, he's good. He could sit. And for the longest time, I had a hard time being able to do that. Mm-hmm. I couldn't sit. I could sit for an hour, and then I'm like, I could probably see better if I move over there.
Well, it's always, what's on the next ridge?
Yeah. Then I found that I'd walk all the time. Mm-hmm. And I was seeing more deer that way. And I was shooting more deer that way. So that's what I did for years, was walk. And I hate to say it, but one of the funnest ways that we used to hunt was, you know, we drove deer.
We used to do it when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's how we did it forever until it became, you know.
Yeah, you can only have 3 people in your
group. Yeah, so it became a big no-no, and we're like, oh. But the funnest times I think I've had hunting were doing that. Because if you were a group with like 6, 7 guys, and you know where so-and-so's over here, so-and-so's over there, and you hear that gunshot come from a certain direction, and you're like,
oh, you get excited.
Oh, you just, yes, you know, and then you just wait for the phone call or the text, you know, or the call and the walkie-talkie to where they are, or who got it, or whatever, you know. And you take down 3 or 4 deer in a day and just think nothing of it and just have a blast and just enjoy beers at the end of the day and talk about it. And
yeah, you'd have the game pool. You'd sit at the game pool and look at the deer and have a few beers and, you know, talk about the story, the hunt of the day. It was
And luckily for me, a couple of the guys that we hunted with were older, more experienced guys. And that's where I started to learn a lot of stuff from them. And a lot of that's paid off. And then now I do a lot of it on my own. I seek out, you know, I'm not afraid to go knock on a door, you know, private land, that kind of thing.
What's the worst they're going to say? No, right?
Right.
You know, and that's...
Sometimes they get angry.
They can, but at the same time, you know, if you're respectful to them and you say, you know, I've had landowners where I've gone and asked for permission and they've been complete jerks.
Yep.
And I would go back and I would just say, I apologize if I offended you. I just trying to do this and trying to make it right. And a lot of times you'll get permission after that.
Right.
You know, and it's weird how that works. They got a misconception of how it is. And then after they see you a few times, it's like they get comfortable and they're like, okay, well, if you want to come in, you know.
Well, so like where I hunt now, I have this one spot, it's a farm. And it's great because I'm a firm believer that like farms, you know, businesses, hunting around those areas, because the smells, the noises, they're so used to it. Like people talking, that kind of thing. Like I'm set up in this one spot where, you know, 70 yards behind me is the horse pasture and the horses are just hanging out. They're doing whatever. You could hear them working on the farm. You know, you could hear the ducks. You could hear everything. And there's all different smells. Wind direction's always, you know, going all different ways. And that's where I see a ton of deer. And they hug the farm, like right along the pastures. And so my boy with the turkey hunting this year, we have this other spot, good friend of mine. His mother owns a lot of land, and, you know, she told us we wanted to post it. We could, so we hunted it post by permission only. I can hunt there. My father can hunt there. My brother can hunt there. You know, anybody that, you know, has been around can. So I told my son, I was like, you want a turkey hunt out back there? Because I know there's birds there. I'm like, you're going to have to ask permission if you want to hunt. So we went over there the other day, and he asked, he's like, Miss Pat, and he's like, can I hunt turkeys on your property? And she's like, all right. And then she's like, do I need to fill you out a, you know, permission slip and all that? And he's looking at me, and I'm like, no, we're good for that. But, you know, but I'm
then driving him young.
Yeah, you know? But then driving home, he's like, why did I have to ask if you're allowed to hunt it? And I was like, well, just because I'm allowed to doesn't mean that you're allowed to or anybody else is allowed to. So you know, to cover your own butt, you need to make sure you got permission for yourself. And he was kind of thinking about it, and he's like, yeah, that's good. He's like, that was kind of cool when she said yes, though. I was like, yeah, see?
You know, but those are the life lessons that you're teaching him that's so important. You know, and a lot of that gets missed nowadays. You know, and I think that as hunters and as sportsmen, as recreationists, anything we do, you know, it is good talking with the landowners and see where they're at. Because I know when I hunt up in Dover Foxcroft, it's funny, up there, like, all these fields during deer season get posted, right? But I turkey hunt them, and I know a lot of landowners, and I'll ask them, like, so we can't hunt? He goes, no. He goes, what happens is a lot of people will drive by the field, see a deer, and they shoot in it.
Yeah.
And he's like, so we just don't want people shooting in the fields because, A, you don't know what's behind it.
Right.
And, B, we just don't want people shooting deer in the field, you know, from the road. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. He's like, we don't mind people hunting if they come in and ask permission. Because right. You'd be fine. A lot of people won't even stop if they see a posted sign. You know, and I used to be that way, too. I didn't want the rejection. Now I look at it as this way. I'm going to ask permission. If they say no, I'll move to the next one.
Yeah.
I'll move to the next one. And you'd be surprised at how many permissions you can get that you didn't think you would get. That, like, down on the coast, I never thought I was going to get any permissions on these million-dollar houses.
Well, they're tired of the deer eating their shrubs and their flowers. And yeah.
You know, and when I first started out, I used to be a landscaper when I was younger. And used to go down there and replace a lot of these shrubs. So being me, I'd always throw that out there. Hey, do you allow any deer hunting? And they would be like, most of the time they'd say no. And then sometimes they'd be like, can you shoot them today? And, you know, and you kind of get your way in. And, you know, I've got this one place down there I've hunted for 28 years now. And I don't hunt it a lot, but the family that owns it, you know, their son has it now because the lady and her husband died and her son took it over. And so she used to only allow like 4 or 5 people hunt it. And I'm telling you, this place was like, it was like deer grazing. It was like cattle. I'd never seen so many deer, but they never let anybody hunt it. And finally, I got to the point where it was just, there's too many. And they said, yeah, come on in. So we started bow hunting. And when they passed away, their son got it. And now he allows like 22 people to hunt it. There's just so many people down there.
Yeah.
And it's great. You know what? I don't mind it. I've got, you know, I go in with a climber. I go out with a climber. You've got some people that put stands up everywhere. And they kind of like, hey, what are you doing? This is where I'm hunting. And I don't mind it so much, but I have hunter etiquette. So, like, if I'm in a tree stand or if I see something in a stand, I move off. I go someplace else.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and down there, it's tough because you're kind of constricted in a small area. So, everybody thinks they own everything. And I've always been able to adapt. Like, hey, listen, you want to hunt yet? Go for it. You know, and I think that mobility of being able to say, hey, listen, if something doesn't work tonight, you can do something else. That's been the key to success in a lot of those areas down there. I have a lot of spots because I move around a lot. The deer move around a lot. People interact with them. But like you were talking about earlier, with they get used to stuff, especially down on the coast. They're so around everybody. I've seen people that will come down and they'll see people walking and they'll be like, yeah, there's going to be no deer coming out. 10 minutes later, you've got a buck walking out behind them. You know, it's just the way it is. Now, when you hunt up north, total different strategy.
Yes.
Up north, I'm looking for food sources. I'm looking for crossings. I'm looking for all that stuff. I like hunting up there during snow, of course. But if I don't up there during the snow, I do the same tactics as I do down here. I look for the food source, bedding areas, and I hunt around that stuff. Edge. I always use this term, edge. And I always get asked, what are you talking about? Hardwoods to softwoods. Swamp to hardwoods. Swamp to, you know, hemlocks or pines or Christmas trees or, you know, spruces. That edge is where you're going to find most of your buck travels. Very rarely, and a lot of guys will hunt right in the food source, you know, which is great. Sometimes it works.
Yeah.
For me, I like knowing where the food source is. And we'll say you have white oaks and red oaks, right? Everybody says, yeah, they're going to eat the white oaks. Well, I've seen it where deer will come in, and sometimes they'll pass a white oak to get to a red oak acorn tree, eat all acorns around that, and then go to the next tree.
Right.
You know, it's you got to find where they're feeding at that time and then be able to move with that. And that's why I like the climbers. Although the saddles now have been coming in, and I haven't done it yet. My son has.
I've been looking at them pretty hard. I've also been looking at the price tag.
Yeah, it's everything. Like a grand to I'm get like, into it.
Jesus, just to get set up and you don't know if you're going to like it. But, I mean, for the most part, everyone that I've talked to that has one that's used them loves them.
Yeah.
You
can get in any tree at that point.
Basically, yeah.
So it doesn't make a difference where you are. If you see something you want to get in, you can get in it.
Like, my climber is great, but it's still...
You got to find the right tree.
You still got to find... Yeah, that's the thing, too, is like you find this beautiful spot that you want to hunt, and there's just, for some reason, no trees that are available, you know? And then it depends on the type of tree.
Yeah.
You know, there's going to be a certain kind of tree that you're going to go up unless you want to risk it. And then you want to risk sliding down or whatever. But yeah, climbers, I started using one probably 4 years ago. And I love it. I
love it because I go in and out with it now. I don't have to worry. The only thing that I found now is some of the areas I hunt, if I leave my truck out there, I've had guys come in, which I don't mind. I don't mind people coming in. Come on in, you know what I mean? If I'm in a tree and if people are moving around, the deer are just going to move around.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't make a difference to me. You know, sometimes I actually wish people would start coming around the woods to get them up on their feet. But it's one of those things that I've adapted to the climb. I really like it. I'll have some fixed stands here and there if it's in a place that I've got permission and I can put it up and I know it's not going to get messed with.
Yep.
But 99% of the time, it's all climber use.
I think I have six permanent stands that are out. Not permanent, but, you know, you know, hard stands. And I think I might have sat in one once last year.
It's so comfortable being in a climber.
It is.
You know? And the way I've got it set up now is I've got these adapters where I can put my cameras and stuff on it. I've made some new little things that I can set my cameras up on it. I can use your phone. You know, and a lot of people, like a lot of the footage on my YouTube channel, Buck Reaper, is taken with a phone. So your phone that you have has the camera system in it is the most advanced there is.
Right.
Like my cameras that I had for the TV show, they're all HD and stuff. They're great, but they're cumbersome. Even though they're not that big, they're still, you got to bring all the equipment out.
You got to find ways to mount them. You got to find,
with your phone and stuff, I've got these mounts that I bought that I can put several on my rail around my stand. And if I see something come in, I just take my phone, move it, zoom it in, turn everything on. I got a wireless mic for it. I've got a mic for it. I can do everything with that. So a lot of the hunts that I've got on that channel has all been done with my phone. And I just got an edited program at home. I just download everything, edit it, and throw it on the channel.
So have you found, like, obviously hunting and all that, the filming and all that is just another aspect of it, and that you, I can tell you're enjoying it, that you really enjoy doing it.
Well, the film, it was funny. Me and Chris Cobbett were sitting one day up north. Me and him were best friends ever since school. And we were watching Michael Waddell, Realtree Road Trips.
Yep.
And we're sitting there and we're drinking a beer together. We're like, why can't we do this? And I'm like, well, why can't we? Let's just get a camera and go do it. And it sounded easy at the time. We had a hard school of knocks going up through it. But you know what? We just kept doing it. You know, if you get somebody you can hunt with, or even if you hunt by yourself, you'll develop that technique. And we were out there doing it anyways. We started with turkeys, bears, some of the easier things. And then deer was always going to be the toughest one, right? And it developed into the TV show. And we ended up meeting the owners of Northwood Sporting Journal. And Chris at the time was actually writing an article for them. So they saw what we were doing and were like, wow, these guys are up-and-comers. They're from New England. Nobody was really doing it from up here. Everybody was down south. So they said, hey, listen, we're willing to sponsor you guys and put a show together if you're willing to do it. I said, yeah, let's do it. So we did. And everything just started falling into place. We hunted as a team. When we weren't hunting as a team, we used ground blinds, everything, set the cameras up. The hardest thing was being disciplined enough not to shoot when you had the shot if you didn't get it on film.
If it wasn't ready yet.
And that was the toughest thing. Or coordinating your don't shoot. We learned this quick, you know. Don't shoot. All you're in your mind, you hear is shoot, so you shoot, and you don't get it on film. You know, we learned quick, and then we ended up, you know, me and Chris, we broke off, and we started doing our own show, Northwoods Adventures TV. And we did that for, I think we were like 5 years into that. We had some great sponsors and still great friends. And we got to meet a lot of the guys, Michael Waddell, Butsky, all these guys. We're meeting them, you know, going down the SHOT Show, and we're hanging out with them. You got a couple of New England boys that, you know, he's a school teacher. I'm a quality manager for Georgia Pacific, and here we are. We're out hanging out with these guys, and they're treating you like you're like one of the gang,
right.
You know? And it was pretty cool. And then, you know, like I was telling you earlier, you know, with that comes a little scary. I mean, our show was rated number 37 at the time. And here we are as, you know, school teacher and a quality guy, you know, doing it on our days off from work. And it just showed, we were trying to show people that you can have a job, not make a lot of money, and you can still do this. You don't have to be Lee and Tiffany or, you know, Michael Waddell and them to do this as a full-time job. You can go out there, have fun, teach people how to do this, and be successful at the same time with a limited budget. And that's what we were doing. Like, we would go away for a day to a place and hunt and try to learn it. You know what I mean? Some days we'd be successful, sometimes we wouldn't. But we like to showcase our successes and our failures too. Because the one thing I think about the shows is that they show you all the success. Yeah. They don't show you the hours you sit in a tree stand or whatever you're doing and you don't see anything.
That's one of the things, like, I love Steve Rinella, like Meat Eater. I like those because a lot of it, he hunts public land.
Yep.
And a lot of these times he doesn't end up you know, getting what he was going there to, you know, try to hunt, try to harvest. And I think that shows a lot to, like, another side of hunting that, you know, it's not always...
No, unless the reality. Because
you watch a lot of these hunting shows and, you know, they sit there and this, you know, 230-pound staver comes walking through and they're like, no, we're going to give it another 10 minutes because we think there might be something else. And
drives me nuts.
You know, I can't stand that.
Couldn't do it.
And then people think when they hunt down south that's all it is. And that's definitely not the case. But
well, when you hear about a 200-inch deer being shot now, are you surprised?
No.
No. Like back 15 years ago, 20 years ago, if you heard of a 200-inch deer, they would have been on every newspaper there was, magazine. Oh, my Lord. Now, a 200-inch deer is commonplace in a lot of these places. And it's, you know... I have a tough time when I see people passing up a 170 because, hey, I know there's a 190 here or something. And I get that. If you can do that, great.
Yeah.
I can't do that. If right. that 170 walks out, he's probably going to get shot. Yeah. I'm just saying. Or a doe comes out. And it's just, it's one of those things now where it's taken hunting and it's almost commercialized. And it's like, for me, it's not all about the size of the antlers, the size of the deer. It's about the experience and fun you have, right? So... The reason why I wanted to start doing a show and stuff is when I was real young, my uncle had passed away. I never knew my uncle. Like, he died and I was 3 years old, didn't know him.
Yep.
But I was always curious about, hey, it was my dad's brother. You know, see pictures, hear stories, all this stuff. But I never knew him. And I saw a few pictures here and there. And you know, it really affected me where I was like, you know what? When I had my son, I was like, what if something happened, right? How is he going to know me? As a person, as a dad, as all that. And I said, you know what? If we can do the filming and the pictures and all that stuff, this is how he's going to know who his dad was. And so we started doing that. You know, and that's been the biggest part of my life is like making memories, right? You hear Scott Davis saying
yeah,
that
Scott
with
David.
AJ.
Yeah.
And AJ was as close to me as a son. Him and my son were like two peas in a pod.
Right.
I could tell you stories about them and I would laugh and cry at the same time.
I remember watching them run around on, you know, in the cove fishing.
God, those kids. But, you know, and you never truly understand until you lose somebody you care about. And right. then it hits you hard. Like, I should have taken more pictures. I should have done some video. And I don't want to be the I should have. I want to do it. I want to go have fun. I want to do all that stuff. And, you know, making memories can be anything. It could be just spending time sitting on the couch. But being in the woods for me is I wanted to try to capture as much about who I was as a person. So if anything did happen, my son would have something. Or like in Scotty's case with AJ, if something happened to my son, I had something about him. You know, right. I've got tons of footage with AJ, which is super cool because we talk about it and I've got a lot more than what he posted and stuff. And it's like, I'm thankful that we did that, you know?
Oh, for sure.
Because you just don't know. And it, for me, that was the biggest thing was making those memories.
Yeah. So yeah, like you said, like making memories, that's huge. And it's fun now, like you look back at your friends over the years and all that, like you almost start to kind of not forget about them. But then somebody will mention something about what happened in the woods, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember doing that. I remember walking out, and that dude tripped over whatever and took a digger. And then one thing I've always said is I'll never give up the opportunity to help a buddy drag a deer out of the woods.
Exactly.
So, like, was it last year, year before, a good friend of mine, James, was hunting not far from where I was, and I get a Snapchat from him of a deer. He had just stuck with a bow, and then... You know, it wasn't quite finished yet, but, like, he had just got it. And I was like, you're not far from me. I'm getting ready to head out anyway. I'm like, need a hand. And he's like, yeah, if you want, you know, come on. So I go out there. I'm like, you want me to bring my jet sled? It's in the back of the truck. And he's like, nope, you're fine. It's not that far of a drag. It'll be easy. Get out there. I didn't realize the deer was as big as it was. It was a beautiful eight-pointer. And I'm like, yeah, should have brought the jet sled. Like, this is going to suck. So we started dragging it, and his old man was out there with him and stuff, and that's when I like kind of realized and it kind of hit me. I was like, man, this is just, I'm so happy right now, even though like I didn't see the deer. I wasn't there for the hunt, but like I'm still part of his now, like yeah. Which made it, you know, cool. And just I've always said, if you call me, I'll drop whatever I'm doing if possible to come give anybody a hand to get a deer out of the woods. And people have done it for me. And I mean, I've given complete strangers four-wheeler rides out of the woods before, you know, see him at, you know,
yeah,
when the dark's coming in, they're like, oh, you know, you got your wheeler. And I'm like, yeah, where are you parked? And then, you know, they'll tell you, and it's like, well, Jesus, bud, you got
to walk.
You got to haul, you know. I'm like, hop on, let's go, you know. We were doing this piece. There was a couple guys, and we were walking, and all of a sudden, boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, wow, Chris is over there. I'm like, this is perfect, you know. So I've got my phone out texting Chris, and he's like, no, it wasn't me. He goes, maybe it might have been your father. And I'm like, no, there's no way he's going to shoot that many times. So I call my father, text my father. Nope, wasn't me. I'm like, if it wasn't any of you guys, I'm like, who the hell is it? Who is it? So we come walking up, and like right where we had parked, this guy was kind of down over this ditch into this marsh, and he had this he told my father it was 160 pounds, which I believe him. I mean, this doe was ginormous. I had never seen anything like it. And he's like, yeah, he goes, I don't know what's going on. I just started walking in, and these deer just come running it up over this ridge. And I'm just kind of shaking my head. I'm like, I know exactly where they came from, you know. I heard them take off. And, but yeah, we got it. And then I'm like, which way did you come in from? And he's like, oh, I came in way over on this street over here. And I'm like, are you planning on dragging this thing all the way back through there? Because he had, it was going to be rough. And he goes, well, who's got the four-wheeler? And I was like, that's mine. He's like, well, I'm like, no, no problem. We'll hook it up. And he's like, well, it was the last day of the season, too. And he's like, well, I don't want to take time away from what you guys. I'm like, no, it's fine. I don't care. So we hooked his deer up. I dragged it out. He hopped in the Jeep with my father and my brother. They brought him to his truck. He got to his truck, drove to, like, where the trail was, where I dropped his doe off and everything. And then he came and picked it up. And then he tried to give us money. I'm like, no, I don't want your money. You know, this is all part of the experience. I don't want any of your money. He goes, well, at least take this, you know, $10-$15 and go buy a 12 pack. And I'm like, all right, well,
that's different then.
Yeah, I'll do that. So we did that. And then we're looking in the Jeep and realized that he had left a little backpack in there. And he had given us like kind of just enough information about whereabouts he might live. So I told my father, I'm like, well, tomorrow, if you're in the area, drive around. There's probably going to see a deer hanging somewhere, and you'll figure out where the guy's house is.
Yeah.
And he did, and he brought it back, and the guy was super thankful and all that, you know, because, you know, how many people would have done that for a dude? Help him get his deer out, and then chauffeur him to his vehicle, and then return his property there.
But see, that's the key, like being a sportsman, and you hit it on the head. You're like, my younger days coming up, I felt like I needed to shoot a big deer. It's like, as you evolve as a hunter and as you get older, you see things in a different light. When I was younger, I had to shoot the biggest buck there was, had to weigh the most, all this stuff. And I put a lot of pressure on myself to try to be the best, but I was new at it. And what I found over the years was that really didn't mean anything. Now, when I go out, anybody I take out or anybody that wants to hunt with me, I get more excitement out of them harvesting a deer than I do myself. I would rather see, if you went out with me and you shot the biggest buck that we were out after, I would be so tickled pink, you wouldn't believe it. And that's just the way I am. And it's the same with the kids. And I wholeheartedly tell everybody this, is that when I take kids out, I don't care if I've got the biggest buck in the world on camera. I'm setting this kid up for this.
Right.
And if they harvest that deer, I'll do it. I'll find another one. And I usually shoot my deer towards the end of the season anyways. I try to, you know, help out and do stuff again. I just love being in the woods.
I was going
to
say, are you a just be in the woods kind of guy, so you hold off? Is that...
Depends. I mean, I used to not pass up a lot of deer. Now I'm more picky as I get older, I think. I want to harvest a good deer, a nice mature deer. But at the end of the day, I like harvesting deer. So if it's a spike, a four corn, 10 point, or a doe, I'm probably going to come out of the woods with something,
yeah.
You know what I mean, before the year is over. And it's just, I try to give myself some time to do it. You know, I've made that mistake, you know, we're from New England, so, you know, the buck craze was, hey, it's got to be 200 pounds, it's got to be 200 pounds. And I don't know how many times when I was up north, I'd get on a deer and I'd see him, and he didn't have a big rack, so I didn't shoot, or I didn't think he was 200 pounds. And I'll never forget, I had a buddy of mine with me, and we were tracking this one deer, and I passed the deer up. And he couldn't believe it. He's like, I can't believe you just passed that deer up. And I was like, yeah. And I'm like, it didn't have, you know, it didn't look like a big deer. And the deer ran off. And I said, well, let's keep on him. And he ends up shooting it. Weighed 207. So I didn't know what I was talking about. You know, a nice rack on it. And he's like, I can't believe you passed it up. And I'm like, you know, it was a quick shot. And it was if I would have had it. And I always thought of that. I'm like, you know, it was kind of arrogant of me to do that. We tracked the deer all day. And then all of a sudden we see him and, oh, I'm not going to shoot him. I'm like, what am I doing? I'm out here deer hunting. I'm deer hunting. And it doesn't matter whether it's a fork horn, a spike, the biggest buck in the world. If you're having fun and you're, you know, like I said, you're making memories, whatever, you're learning something. To me, it's all about learning. It's a learning experience. I learn something every year. And I tell my son this all the time. I've got a ledger that I write everything down in. Now it's pretty good because you can do everything on your phone. You actually talk right. to your phone and it writes everything. And what I'll do is at the end of the year, I take every day that I went out and whatever I learned, whatever I saw, and I review all that. And I say, okay, what did I learn this year that I can apply for next year, right? And I'll find two or three key things out of that that goes in my bag of tricks for next year.
I was going to say, you probably start picking up patterns and that kind of thing that you didn't realize at the time until obviously you had all that information in front of you.
Yeah.
And that you can go back through and look through and then be like, wow, like, that made a lot of sense.
Yeah, and you don't see it at the time, right?
Right.
And then at the end of the year when you're going through all, they're like, wow, wait a minute. This deer did this like three different times on, you know, in a matter of 2 weeks, and you don't even realize it. And those are the things I try to key in on and try to help other people out. Like little Scotty Robitelli.
Oh, I love those videos.
I love that kid. You know yeah. what I mean? And what's funny is Robo doesn't hunt a lot. He used to hunt when he was younger, but he doesn't hunt. But and for little Scotty to get so excited to go, you know, Uncle Nate, you take me out. And him harvesting his first deer, and I'll be honest with you, he missed a few before that.
Yeah.
But it was all a learning thing. And I told him, I said, you're not going to go out and just sit down and shoot something. We're going to learn. And he put some miles on. I'll tell you, I walked that kid. We showed him scrapes, rubs, tracks, food sources. And that morning, we had done all that work, and we finally sat down. And said, we're going to go into that spot where we found everything. We're going to sit there and see what happens.
Yeah.
And I never heard the deer coming. He actually heard it. He's like, Uncle Nate, there's a deer coming. And I'm looking around like, where? I don't see it. And then all of a sudden I see it, and he's pointing, and he ended up getting the deer, which was just...
Yeah, it was a cool video.
Incredible.
Yeah. No, like, so like my brother, he's hunted a lot. I always say he's always one of those definitely more lucky kind of guys. Because, you know, we like I said, I walked a lot, and he was always the one that would sit. So he got a lot more opportunities, I think, than I did. And then, but I almost feel, because like between him, my father, my buddy Tom, you know, we'll go. Then everyone kind of, we get out there, then everyone kind of looks at me like.
What are we doing?
Yeah, what's the plan? I'm like, I don't know, I can sit by a tree and hope to see a deer, I guess. But no, it's like, you know, now I'm the one that's like pointing. I'm like, you know, the ridge over there, you know, you go to the old tree stand over there. You know, someone goes sit by the, you know, that spot of that way. And then, like, whenever you do that and then someone takes a deer from that spot that you sent them to or whatever, that's still the same cool feeling that you get from.
Oh, it's awesome. It's like a win-win situation.
Right. You know? Yeah. I mean, anytime you're out there with friends and, you know, buddies or family and something like that, and someone takes a deer down, it's awesome. It's a good day.
It is. Some of my friends or some of the people I'll take out, and I'll admit, I have names for different spots or different roads that may not exactly be the road name.
Yep.
And my son, he's funny. Like, we go to a spot and I'll say, hey, go get by the big pine. You know where that is. Mm-hmm. And he'll head off like he knows what's going on. And then he'll give me a call. He's like, Dad, what big pine are you talking about? I'm like, you know the big pine. He's like, Dad, there's big pines everywhere in here. Which one? And I start laughing. I'm like... All right, so I got to be a little bit more specific. And some of the things I take for granted, like he should know, because some of these areas we've hunted for years, and I'm just so acute to it. I think like big pine, big oak, the stream, you know, brook, you know, brook trout stream, go over there, stay over there, get on the other side, get up in the oaks and stuff. And he has to remind me that, you know, hey, Dad, you know, a lot of these places have big trees, and they actually have names to like the streams and the roads. And I'm like, hey, you know, what do you want?
No, I get that. But I mean, a lot of the times now, you know, people show up, they'll get out of the truck, and everyone knows their spot, and everyone knows where they're going and where they're heading. And, you know, my buddy Tom, he's got his chair, you know, the meat seat where he, you know, there's quite a few deer that have been harvested from it. And that's where I was sitting when that bear came up behind me.
Holy smokes.
This past year. And
confidence, though. And this is what I tell everybody. I mean, I've known some people that I've taken out and even guided, and their first comment getting out of, like, if it's a rainy day or, you know, it's not perfect conditions, what people consider perfect, we're not going to see anything. And I always try to remind them, like, any time that I go in the woods or any time I'm doing something, I am always like, I'm going to shoot a deer today. I don't care if it's the worst weather in the world, I'm going to shoot a deer today. And I just have that ingrained in me that I'm confident. I want to be confident. I want to be able to make that shot and everything. You know, and I see, you know, especially when I'm guiding, I'll see people show up with equipment they've never used before. And I always explain to them, I said, have you ever shot this gun before? Yeah, I've shot it at the range. I'm like, no, have you ever shot the gun? Like, to me, when I pull my gun up, it's like an extension of my arm. I'm like, right. I know where I'm going to shoot. It's just comfortable. And I see people switching guns a lot or even archer equipment. And it's like, get comfortable with your equipment, because when the shot happens or when that moment of truth comes up, you want everything in your, you know, everything to work. It's got to be like a full motion, like wham, there it is. And you just feel so confident you're going to make the shot. But I see people, you know, sometimes that, you know, they're negative about it, like, oh, we're not going to see anything. If you go into the woods like that, you're setting yourself up for failure. And so anytime we go out, I'm always confident, like, worst weather it can be. Yeah. Guys, guess what? We're out here. We got a chance.
Yep.
It may not be the most best conditions, but guess what? We've got a chance. And let's make it happen. And, you know, I think having that positive attitude, you know, it brings you into better things.
Yeah. Another thing I wanted to ask you was, we talked a little earlier about like a social media issue or whatever that, you know, one of the things that kind of bothers you. But do you think social media is actually, I mean, it's not bad for hunting, but do you think, I mean, you've obviously seen on like Maine Deer Hunters or whatever how guys go at each other and, you know, like sometimes, like I had a buddy of mine, we did a podcast and he's like a big racing guy and like racing's like, it's a pretty well-known fact that it's kind of a dying thing. And right around the time social media was like really hit is when that kind of stuff started happening. You know, people trashing racetracks and like that kind of thing. I feel like deer hunting and social media, a lot of people probably get discouraged because a lot of people, you see some questions on there and you're like, did you really just ask that? But then you got to think about it. If that person is legit brand new, and they don't know, and people will always give them a hard time, like, oh, pick up a law book or, you know, read that, read this, which is what you should do anyway, obviously. But I feel like people are so, I don't know what the correct word is for it, but there's just assholes, basically, you know, to a lot of people. And then, you know, more land's getting posted.
Well, you get a figure, so social media is here to stay. You
know, it's not
going anywhere. You've got everything. You've got from TikTok to Instagram to, you know, Snapchat to Facebook. There's all kinds of different YouTube. So you can get the information everywhere. From what I see is it's how as sportsmen we utilize that, right? Tearing people down online just because you can, you shouldn't do it.
No.
You know, if people have generally are asking questions, to me, social media should be a thing where you're learning from, not beating people up. Now it happens. I get it. And normally what I'll do is like on the Buck Reaper North American Trackers page that I run, if I see that stuff happening, I just ban the person from it because I don't want that negativity in there.
It doesn't need to be.
You know, it doesn't need to be. I want it to be growth, learning, because you could have people that have never been in hunting that are on the fence come in and go, wow, this is actually pretty cool. You know what I mean? Or you could have the ones that come in and they tear it down. Now, I don't mind both opinions. If you want to come in and say, hey, you know what? I think it's wrong that you shoot deer. I respect that. Hey, awesome. You know what? You can tell me that all day long, but do it respectfully.
Right.
You know what I mean? You don't have to call me names. You don't have to do anything. You just say, hey, listen, I don't agree with that. That's great. There may be some things I don't agree with you do, but you know what? Each into your own. I don't care. The social media part of it is, and I think some of it is, and you know, and we're in this kind of business, if you want to call it now, is when you have people that will take what you have and they're trying to turn it around. Or you, if you're successful, which is really cool, it kind of plays against you sometimes.
Well, that pisses a lot of people off.
It does. It bleeds jealousy, right? So in the sad thing about it is you shouldn't be jealous of anybody in the first place. You know what? You're your own person. Develop yourself. Get your training. Do all the stuff you need to do. You know, when you first went into jiu-jitsu, you probably weren't an ace. You probably had to learn at first, right?
Oh, I'm still far from that.
But yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a learning thing.
Oh, yeah. Like, when,
And it doesn't matter what you do. You gotta have that
curve. Like, I notice that now is like, you know, I'm testing for blue belt next month, all that. And it's just like hunting. Like, you go through, like, phases where, you know, you might have a dry spell where you don't see shit for, you know, a couple weeks, whatever. Just or the deer you want, you're just not seeing them. It's kind of the same thing with jiu-jitsu is you get in these, like, real lows where, like, you just feel like you're not getting better, you're not progressing, you're not doing anything. And then, unfortunately, like, it takes, like, a newer guy that's below you to come in.
Shows you what you're doing.
No, not even. He comes in, and he doesn't know anything. And then you start, not saying you take liberties over that person, but you roll with that person. And next thing you know, like, you're doing all kinds of stuff, and you're like, oh, wow, I guess I am a little better than I thought I was, you know. And then, or if you start tapping out, you know, blue belts and purple belts and getting guys that are above you. So I guess it kind of goes the same. You know, it's all linked. It's all the same thing as far as, like, it can be converted over to deer hunting as well. As if you're going through a real dry spell and you're super frustrated about, you know, the areas that you're in and what you're doing, and then it only takes that one really good day, whether you should kill a deer or not, but if you're in that one and you see that deer, you see that monster buck, or you just see deer, and you come out of that woods and you just feel so much better.
No, I agree.
And then and it goes in. So it plays the same thing as, like, what I do, but
the cool thing about all that is with social media, and the thing I really love about it is if I can inspire somebody to get in the outdoors or even try it or whatever, that's a win for me. And that's why I post a lot of the stuff I do. I get nervous about posting a lot of stuff. I have a lot of videos and pictures and stuff like that I haven't posted. Because I don't want it to come off as I'm bragging. Because that's the last thing I want anybody to think is that, oh yeah, this guy thinks he's better than all of us, which that never would play in anything that I do, because I don't feel that way. To me, I'm trying to utilize it, and I'm proud of what I do. I'm proud of my harvest, and I'm proud of the people I take out, and I love sharing that with the sportsman community, right? Because we are a big community. You know, and if I can inspire anybody to take that extra 10 minutes to go out and be successful or learn something, that's the whole point of all this.
Right.
You know, and making memories, right? And sharing those memories. And hopefully inspire somebody else to do the same stuff. So I get a little nervous about that. But at the end of the day, I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. And you're always going to have the haters. And you're going to have the people that are jealous. And they expose themselves pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. You don't notice it at first.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden it comes out.
Yeah.
And to those people, I say, you know, grow up.
Yeah.
Try to better yourself. Try to be an inspiration to somebody. Build capability in other people instead of tearing them down. And when you do that, you'll feel good about yourself. You'll feel good about everything that's around you. Good things happen, you know what I mean? And you're just going to keep doing what you do.
Yeah, like, go back to the jiu-jitsu thing. I think, like, a lot of it's like the hunting. You know, if you go out and you show somebody something and they use that and they harvest a deer, their first deer, be whatever deer it is, you know, monster deer, just a deer, you know, you get excited for that person because, you know, it's awesome. Same thing goes with me in, like, jiu-jitsu. You know, if I'm rolling with a guy and I keep getting him with the same thing, I'm going to show him the defense to
what you're doing.
I'm like, this is why this is keeps happening to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then show him that defense. The next time you go to throw on that move or whatever and they do what you said and it stops that, you're like, well, all right, well, now I have to get better because now you know how to do that. So now, you know, it's all this big game that you just play. And I, like I said, you can go back and forth between that, hunting, anything. I mean, pretty much any sport, anything that you really want to get into, you could do that. The big thing is like mats on a jiu-jitsu place or a jiu-jitsu school, whatever, they're douchebag filters. For sure. And you see that in the hunting a lot, is certainly not with you, which is why I enjoy following you so much and seeing the videos. And, like, you write, you know, you'll put on Facebook, I'm heading into whatever, you know, or a quick video, and you're like, oh, I'll see what happens. And I'm like, oh, I can't wait for, like, 3 hours later and get to see what Nate shot, you know?
I appreciate it.
And but then you have guys that are like, yeah, I shot this. Yeah, it's big. And, like, you know, they just go on these rants, and it's like,
yeah.
Like, what are you trying to prove? You're not, first of all, you're coming off like an asshole, you know. I mean, if you're trying to impress anybody, you're not now, because you just lost that.
If you turn them off, you just, it's hard to gain that.
I don't get it. And, you know, I know guys like that, you know guys like that, certainly, that, you know, they just have this attitude about it. And it doesn't do anything for me. Doesn't do anything for you, obviously.
Nope.
And then there's the guys that, I get so mad on, like, an opening day, and a kid shoots, like, a 90-pound or a 70-pound doe, and then you got some asshat that goes on Facebook and starts, you know, bitching that kid shot
a deer.
Shot that small of a doe. It's still got spots on it. Oh,
Kiss.
I'll tell you what. If I take my kid out when he's ready and he wants to, and if I see a doe come through or he sees a doe come through or any deer and it's a button buck or it's got spots on or whatever, have at it, kid. Like, that's going to be, you know.
That's how they build their learning, their skills. And it's not – it's, and that's the thing we talked about earlier. It's not all about the deer that you harvest. It's about the experience that leads up to it.
Yeah.
And I see that. The one thing I hate about it when I'm on social media is I see a guy that shoots a good deer – and then says, oh, it's not a big one, but it's going to be a good eater.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, you see that so much.
Oh,
yeah.
My God, I hate that. I'm like, dude, just be excited and happy for the deer that you decided to pull the trigger or release the arrow on. Yeah. Come on, you know, like, what the hell? Let's all be in this together. If you didn't want to shoot that deer, then don't shoot it. But if you shoot it, be happy for it.
It's no monster, but it'll do. Yeah, it's like,
come on, man. Yeah. You know, what the hell? You know, and it's like all of our groups, you've got crossbow hunters now that are going to be able to crossbow. And I'm listening to all these guys that are upset about crossbow hunting.
I'm a crossbow guy, so I like hear crossbows. It all the time.
I'm like, it's just another form of being able to harvest a deer. I'm in. I don't care. You know, if they bring slingshots in, I'll be in on that. I don't care. But it's like, bow hunters don't like crossbow hunters. Traditional doesn't like either one of them. And it's like, guys, let's all get together. We're all on the same team. Right. Who cares? It's building opportunities for, A, getting youth in the sport, getting people with possible disabilities, or even if they're just on the fence, making an ethical shot. And, you know, and you, I always hear this, well, if they got a crossbow, they're going to take a 100-yard shot. How do you know that? No. You don't know that. I mean, I've
hit a target at 80 yards with my crossbow. I would never shoot at anything over 40 with it.
But with your regular compound bow, and I'll never forget it, so the Given Right TV show with Mark Heck, I got to hunt with him, with Chris Cobbett and stuff, up moose hunting this last year. Up north, and he owns Expedition Archery. Absolutely incredible bow. But this guy practices, like, he could shoot something at 100 yards with his bow, and he literally has videos of him practicing. Yep. And practicing. He goes elk hunting and stuff like that. It's all within your capability you want to do. You're going to have people that are going to take unethical shots. I don't care if you got a gun, bow, right, whatever it is.
Oh, yeah.
People, by human nature, some people make a wrong choice. You know what I mean? But to classify everybody in that is just wrong.
Yeah.
Right? You know, let's weed out. You know, you're going to have a few. Weed that out and just let's build the capability and communication to everybody to do it right.
Yeah.
And let's endorse each other. Let's say, hey, great shot. Hey, you got one with a crossbow? Absolutely incredible. Build people up. Don't tear them down.
Yeah. I mean, I get the, you know, you want to make fun of, like, my friends make fun of me all the time because I crossbow. You know, they're avid compound bow hunters, and I got my crossbow, and they're like, oh, how's your gun bow? I'm like, I don't know, hey, fast. Like,
awesome.
You know, shoots awesome. I love it, and I've harvested two deer with it now, so it's like, yeah, and the thing is, I want to bow hunt. I want to get into archery, but my schedule, and I just don't have the time to dedicate to doing what I need to do that I know that I have to do to be good enough to go out in the woods and take those kind of shots with it, you know?
Yep.
I can get a bow now and start practicing and shooting, you know, daily or whatever, and I'm probably still not going to feel comfortable with that bow come, you know, hunting season. So my crossbow, beep, sighted in, it's ready to go. I know what it's going to do. It took a little while for me to find the right broadheads that worked best for me. I found some. And then, it's all over now. And now they're saying, what, you're going to be able to hunt expanded with a crossbow?
Well, I think that I'm pretty sure this year, if it passes, everything does, which I think it did, you're going to be able to do that.
Which obviously is going to upset a ton of people because
it's a small area.
Like, I get that point, that part of it, totally. I completely understand that, which it's already a small area. There's already a lot of people there. And now you're going to get, you're going to get more. And there's going to be issues there, too, which, I mean, other than being able to hunt earlier, the expanded doesn't really, it's not something that I'm really interested in. I also don't have the time to do it. So, but like you said, it's going to give people a lot more opportunities to go out. You know, the guy that can only hunt on Saturdays, you know, those kind of people, which goes to like the whole hunting on Sundays kind of thing, which I don't think we'll ever see that change, but.
We probably won't.
You
know, and I'm mixed with that. I'm like, so the same people that don't want it are making this argument. I'm sure they're hunting New Hampshire on Sunday. Right. It's a different state. And, you know, whatever. If I can't hunt Maine, I'll hunt New Hampshire. I'll go to another state. But I've got the luxury where I can do that. A lot of people, I think you discourage people from getting in the sport if they don't have extra time. I think you could do it on private property. If you had a landowner that would allow you to hunt on Sunday, that would be perfect. But, you know, hey, for right now, it's not going to happen. But for Sunday hunting in New Hampshire, I love the Maine expanded because of how early it is, because I just love deer hunting and the opportunity to get one in velvet. I've taken two in velvet, yeah. And I love that. It's just different. But New Hampshire, I hunt literally, if my expanded spots stay getting really pounded, I go to New Hampshire. And in New Hampshire, you can hunt that statewide, and you can hunt on Sundays.
I like how New Hampshire does it, how they do the archery, muzzle loading, then rifle. I don't really particularly care about the does. You can only shoot does on certain days, but I think that's residents only, right? Or is that?
No, so what they do is it depends on the zone that you're in. So, like, if you're in L&M, you could buy two extra tags for it. But if you didn't have a tag, you could, I think it's like the first 2 weeks in those zones. Yeah. There's a bunch of them. And then, like, up north, you have none. But some of them have, like, three-day openings to, like, a week or something.
But I'm a firm believer that muzzleloader should be before rifle. I think that.
Well, it's funny is everybody says they want to see bigger bucks, right? You want to see bigger bucks? Shorten your gun seasons, just like out west. Now, to do that up north would be hard. We don't have the deer population that Iowa or Illinois. I've hunted those states, and I'll be honest with you. You take somebody from New England, and you bring them out to those states, I'm telling you, it's a whole different world. They have some deer. And out there, you can get picky if you want to shoot a good deer, you know, and it's just for us up in New England, first time I went out there, I shot Missouri hunting. I went out there, second deer I saw, nice 10-point, bing, I shoot him. It was like 135 inches. To me, that's a giant.
Right.
Out there, when I come in with it, the guy's like, what'd you shoot that for? I'm like, what are you talking about? Look at that deer. He weighed 210 pounds, and he was a 10-pointer, and he was 135 inches. And they're like, yeah, we would have passed that up all day long. Yeah, I'm like, I'm from New England, man. Yeah, that deer don't get by me, you know? And it's just a different way of looking at it. It's like when you talk about 200-pound deer in New England, you go anywhere out west and stuff, and I'll give you a short story. Chris was in one camp. I was in another camp. I shoot a deer. It was just over 200 pounds. I called him up at his camp, and I said, hey, Chris. I said, I just shot a nice 10-pointer. He's over 200 pounds. I said, he was like 210, 215. And he's like, no kidding. Well, there was an outdoor writer in his camp. He heard us say 210 to 215. He goes, dude, we're coming to see you. And I'm like, you're coming to see me? He's like, yeah, this guy's all jack. He's like, 210, 215, he's going to come do an article with you.
He thought
I'm like,
that was inches.
He thought it was inches. And I didn't know this. So they're halfway over. And I'm like, dude, this guy really thinks that's a big deal. I've shot bigger in Maine. And he's like, I don't know, man. He wants to come over. So halfway there, he calls me out. He goes, dude, he thought it was like 200-inch deer. And I'm like, yeah, I wish. And so they turn and run back. But that's the difference between New Englanders and out west. But that was our first experience with it.
Well, and I think, too, a lot of people are like, wow, there's a lot of giant deer around. I'm like, no, it's just because now it's on social media. You know, there's so many, everyone can post pictures. So,
well, you say that. So on my site, I started posting some of the stuff from Mastic and the New Hampshire sites and Vermont. Some of the big deer that people have been killing. And I actually got a little bit of feedback from it. I had some people say, why are you posting all these pictures of these big deer? Now we're going to get flooded with, you know, all these out-of-staters coming in. I'm like, well, these deer are already on social media. I'm just kind of correlating them in a spot where people can see. And I'm like, I did it because I want people to understand that these aren't everyday deer, but they are here.
Right.
We have 200-inch deer in Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont. They're here, few and far between, but the capability is there of getting one. You just got to be the lucky person to, you know, draw the lottery ticket and see him.
Right. So big plans for the season. What are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to turkey season, taking some youth out. To me, that's the best thing. Then I think I'm going to try some recurve hunting. That's the only thing I haven't done is recurve. So last year did it with handgun, all that stuff. But turkey season and I always say this, turkey season and bear season gets me to deer season. That's really the next thing's coming up. Deer season is my biggest thing I look forward to every year. It's like Christmas morning to me. Yeah. I can't get enough of it. And as the season's going on, I get worn out, and I'll tell you, I put a lot of pressure on myself, and my wife, she sees it because I do put a lot of pressure on myself. But at the same time, I have a lot of fun. And she gets to hear all the stories, and I love her because she'll listen to me. I didn't have a clue what I'm talking about. But she's always like, that's great, hon. That's awesome. Big smile on her face. You going back out tomorrow? Yeah, I hope you get your deer. And then when I come home at night, if I don't have a deer, she's like, you didn't get one today? I'm like, no, I didn't get one today. She's like, well, what the heck? What'd you do wrong? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't always get a DA, you know? But it's fun.
Yeah, we usually do, though.
I get lucky once in a while. Hey, but I get to go to craft fairs with her when I do get one.
Yeah.
That's the key right there. So I get to broaden my horizons.
Compromise. So,
that's right. It's and, you know, that's compromise. What it is. You know, and that brings to a good point is, like, the people that you're with, right? Your wife, your family, whoever, having them support you and encourage you means the most. Because that can make or break a hunter.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I'm saying? And truly, well,
I've seen relationships get wrecked from it. So, I mean,
I've been there.
Yeah. I mean, I was lucky. I met my wife before I was hunting. So when we got together, like, I'm like, this is what I do, you know, and she was really big into turkey hunting. She actually showed me how to dress a bird.
That's awesome.
And she knows more about turkey hunting than I know. And so my boy's like, are you going to go hunt with us this year, Mom? She's like, yeah, I might go. Because she'll shoot a turkey because they're ugly. She won't do a deer, though. But she's gone deer hunting with me, you know, before, like, while we were dating, like, early on and stuff. Like, she's gone and, like, sat with me, like, that kind of thing. But
that's cool.
I feel like if I actually shot something in front of her, she'd probably have been horrified and not really. Because, you know how it is. Like, sometimes it doesn't go as great as you'd like it to. But, no, so, I mean, for me, it's awesome that she supports it. And, I mean, I wouldn't be able to do it if she didn't. Like, that would just be. I wouldn't be able to do it to the extent that I do. I mean, I have a lot of hobbies, obviously, as you can see. And, like, the same thing with the jiu-jitsu thing. When I started that, I started that after we got together. And I think at first she kind of thought it was like, oh, he's going to do this for a little while and stop, which I did. And then I went back.
I'm glad you got back into it.
Yeah. And then I got back into it, and then I've been going hard ever since. And, you know, at first she was like, you know, you're kind of gone a lot, and, like, which. I'd admit I was being very selfish about a lot of stuff. But then I think once she saw, like, what it was doing for me, like, just besides, you know, physically, you know, losing weight, gaining muscle, that kind of thing, like, the mental part of it.
Yep.
And I've had some of my, like, best moments of clarity, best times of thinking, all of that's been done sitting in a tree stand. When you get out there and it's quiet and you're just, it's nothing out there except for you just thinking about stuff, mm-hmm. you know? And, you know, I feel bad for some people that don't enjoy the outdoors. People that, like, some people have never gone out in the woods early in the morning and heard the woods just wake up. You know, they just, and to me, I just feel like, you know, people are missing out on so much stuff. Like, some people just don't care about it. But for me, it's awesome. Like, when, especially, like, after a frost and everything starts kind of coming off the trees as the sun comes up and it's like, when you get out there, it's completely silent, and then the next thing you know, everything's just kind of moving around, and noises everywhere. It's just, there's nothing like it, you know? And
you get to slow down. For me, it's when I go out there, I get to slow down, and I get to put everything else aside and focus on mental energy, right? Building that energy bank back up and, you know, really reflecting on my life and, you know, everything that's going well in it. Because you have a lot of people that, you know, they dwell on the things that are going wrong, right?
Right.
And if you do that, things will go wrong. And I used to do that. And I'll tell you, it puts you in a mental state that just, it's tough. And you know what? And through the years, I've said, you know what? I'm going to focus on the positive stuff. What's positive in my life and how can I champion that, right? And that includes the people you hang out with. You know, the people you hang out with, you know, your family members, everything. It's like everything has to be coincidence where it works together. You know, you're gonna have days where it's not great, but at that same time you're building that mental bank of being positive. If you can be positive while you're out there doing things and have people surround yourself around positive stuff, you're gonna have good things happen. Not gonna happen all the time, and you're gonna have to work at it. You know, a lot of people think it's an instant overnight gratification. It's not. It's you build that over time.
Right.
You know, and that's the thing. And just like you, I mean, when I was younger, I would go and I'd be gone for 2-3 weeks at a time. And it was all about me at that time. I was me. I'm not like that now. Now it's, you know, it's give and take. You know, I'll go to the craft fairs or sit there and eat the brownie batter as she makes it, you know, whatever. But It's honestly, it's one of those things. I enjoy those times and I enjoy the come back. But at the same time, I know I have somebody that supports me and wants me to be the best at what I'm doing. So I'm going to do that in return. I'm going to do the same thing for her and the family and say, hey, what do we need to do as a family? What do we need to do together? And it's going to be give and take.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it has to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, especially, you know, obviously it's been a while for you, but, you know, kids, you know, young kids, like that kind of thing and working around that. And it just, if it's something you love, you're going to find a way to do it. So, you got to make it work. Everyone's going to be happy. And if not, then it's just not going to work out for you. But, yeah, so how can people find you on social media? What's all the different things that you got going on there?
I got a bunch of stuff going on. But so the YouTube channel is Buck Reapers. So you can go on that. Just type in Buck Reaper. My logo will come up. And I think I've got like 79 or 80 different hunts, and 99% of them I did with my phone. A lot of kid hunts, a lot of hunts with my son. I even did a clam in one. How do we dig clams in Maine? You know, and in social media, I mean, you can find me on there. Just, you know, Nathan Fenderson or Nate Fenderson, I guess. And then I've got a page that I have. It's called Buck Reaper North American Trackers. The North American Trackers thing, I have everybody ask, why do you have that in there? Lane Benoit and me, he had started a North American Trackers TV show we were going to do. And I was part of that with him. And then he passed away before it ever came to fruition. And as I was going through this, and Buck Reaper, and it's a funny thing, Buck Reaper came from him. And I'll never forget it. We were out hunting together, and he was always astonished at how I was shooting deer with a bow. He loved the bow hunting. He never did it, but he loved it. And I'd shoot it in. I'll never forget it. I was up to his place up in, what I think it was Waterbury, Vermont. Him and his dad, they lived, Larry lived pretty close together. And I was up to his place, and he's like, we were drinking a beer together at the table. And if you ever went into their houses, it's like a museum. There are so many deer and antlers. It's crazy. And I was sitting there with him and Irene, his wife, and his son, Zeb. And he looked over at me. He says, Nate, we're drinking beer. And he's like, Nate, you're just the original Buck Reaper, man. And it stuck. He started calling me that, and it stuck. Everywhere we went, Buck Reaper, Nate, Buck Reaper. And it just stuck as a name. And I was like, you know, that's a pretty cool name. So to honor him, that's what the name I use. And then on the page on Facebook, you know, Buck Reaper, North American Trackers, it's kind of the page. And I'm trying to get people to come to the page and post stuff on it.
Yep.
Right now I'm posting a lot of content on it, you know, and just trying to get people active and just seeing different things. I don't mind doing that, but I really love seeing everybody else's content,
right?
You know?
No, that's awesome. And yeah. I mean, we could go on forever, obviously. So, you know.
Well, I really appreciate you having taken the time to have, you know, to have me come in and talk with you. There are so many subjects I know we could talk about. I mean, there's just a lot.
No, I'll have you back. That's no problem.
That'd be awesome. But no, I truly appreciate the time. I appreciate everything. And great job on what you're doing. And anything I can do to support and help you, you just let me know and I'm there for you.
No, I really appreciate that. Like I said, you've been recently, well, not recently, the last couple of years, you've been one of the guys I've been watching, looking up to. And
no, I appreciate that.
Trying to gather a little bits of information from, too, that would help me. So, yeah, keep doing what you're doing. And
the cool thing is, I live like 20 minutes from you.
Yeah, I never knew actually where you were at. So
yeah, I'm just down the road. And you're right, I have hunted out behind you.
Yeah, it seems like anybody I talk to that hunts, I tell them where I'm at, and they're like, "Oh yeah, we've been out there before." And it's like, yeah, it seems to be. Luckily, it's not really as pressured as what it used to be, so it's not bad.
That's cool.
But yeah, I appreciate you. Thanks for coming in. And, yeah, check out Buck Reapers on YouTube and on Facebook. And, oh, yeah, the 207 Collective on Instagram. And then you've heard us talk about jiu-jitsu a couple times. If you're interested in hearing me talk about something other than, you know, what we talked about today and other stuff that I do on this podcast, I do another podcast on jiu-jitsu. And that's the Bone Pit Jiu-Jitsu Podcast. Give that a like and a follow on Instagram. And yeah, that's going to do it for us. Thank you, Nate.
Thank you.
And see you.